This tape is a production of Oral Roads Ministry. Your speaker is Jim Lewis, founder and president of Oral Roads Ministry. This particular tape is entitled The Submissive God. This tape is properly called a speculative tape. In other words, it deals with speculative theology. I need to qualify that so you will be less likely to misunderstand what I'm pointing out here. Speculative theology is that field of theology in which the imagination is given less restrictions, in which, understanding certain restrictions, language is relaxed. Therefore, the precision which is necessary in systematic and dogmatic theology, in which certain points are being expressed for purposes of clarification, for distinction, for examination, and for contradistinction of other issues, that precision of language is not going to be used here. I will use an example. Sometimes when we try to explain theological issues or certain basic divine principles to children, we use language which is quite properly not correct. When we say that God wants us to do good and to avoid evil, well, we are attributing in an anthropomorphic sense, which means attributing human attributes to God, what we are saying is that God has desires for us. This is, of course, improper in the clearest understanding of that word. God can desire nothing because one of the definitions of God is a perfectly self-contented being. In other words, God wants nothing in the sense of lacking it or in the sense of desiring it. If one desires something, one can become happier when you achieve it, or become unhappy if the desire is frustrated. As God is, among other things, perfectly happy, he cannot desire anything. Nonetheless, it is easier to explain to a 3 or a 5-year-old that God wants us to do good and avoid evil, rather than trying to get into the concept of offending the majesty of God and the entire program of salvation, the entire concept of incarnation. So therefore, we become floppy, or shall we say, relaxed in our language. I am, in this case, becoming relaxed in my language. Why? Because essentially what I'm dealing with here is poetry. I'm trying to express things by using your language in an unusual way to try to bring about certain aspects of the divine-human relationship which I consider interesting and insightful. Therefore, do not become upset if I say something which is not precisely correct. Do not become upset if I use language in a slightly interesting fashion. And please do not become shocked. What I'm trying to get across here is certain basic issues, and I'm trying to do it in a way of exaggerated use of language. With that qualification, let me use a metaphor, if I may. I doubt if any of us are old enough to remember the so-called medicine wagon that would come to town, but I think most of us have seen it expressed in movies or plays. What we're talking about, generally, is a man comes into town with a wagon, pulled by horses, and on the wagon it says something to the effect of Dr. Brown's magic elixir cure-all. Now, he then will produce a bottle, and the bottle will be considered a cure-all, literally a panacea. And what we have here is a situation where this man will usually claim something to the effect of this. Yes, come on up, folks. What I have here is the secret cure-all of all ages. Yes, given to me by an Indian medicine man who lived himself to be 150, retaining all of his teeth and with perfect vision. This man gave me the secret of the Kickapoo Indian magic elixir, which we now have given you the opportunity to obtain for nearly $1 a bottle. Yes, this magic elixir will cure any remedy known to man. Now, sometimes either shows or people in the audience will then say something to the effect of, will it deal with warts? My friend, I'm glad you asked that. You have warts. You wish to get rid of warts. Rub this on your skin and the warts will be gone within 2 weeks. Someone else will ask if it's good for arthritis.
Absolutely. Heat the bottle in boiling water, rub it on the affected joint, and the arthritic condition will reduce significantly in 2 weeks, so that you'll be able to go out and do your farm work. You'll be able to go out and jump and dance and bite a young dog or a young deer. What about skin conditions? Absolutely. If you have improper skin, simply take 2 teaspoons each night right before you go to sleep, and it will clear up your skin. What about stomach disorders? Oh, there's yes, that friend. Stomach disorders, there's nothing better in the world for it. It absolutely will deal with the stomach disorder, will calm the upset stomach, and it will help the colicky baby sleep at night. Yes, another point, if you have insomnia, this will help you sleep. If you lack energy, it will help you wake up. No matter what your problem is, friends, Dr. Brand's cure-all magic elixir will do it, and you have the opportunity of having it for only $1. All you've got to do is give me that $1, and you're on your way to perfect health. Well, I think you're familiar with the spiel, shall we say. Generally, things will take 2 weeks to work, and in 2 weeks he'll be gone. And it is generally believed that these things were not damaging, certainly not poisonous, and maybe there was some placebo effect. In other words, the power of suggestion made people feel a little bit better. What I wish to advance is that God is, in essence, the man who's selling the cure. God submits himself to meet our needs. Submission is an act of love. When the wife submits herself to the husband, what she does is say this: I know what you want, because you have told me. And if you haven't told me, I've been sensitive and perceptive enough to notice it. I know what you like for dinner, and I know where you like your socks put. And I know what you want when you come home from work. And my job, my goal, my love, is to fulfill that. So therefore I will submit my needs to yours, because by submitting my needs to yours, I fulfill my needs. My needs primarily to be in a house filled with love, to be recognized as needed by you, and to sense gratitude from you. Now, in a certain sense, what I'm saying is God becomes the wife in relationships to us. Certainly God creates our personality, and I'm sure all of us who are over the age of 7 understand that all of us have certain unfulfilled needs and or desires. I don't think this is the place to get into a disagreement about what is a need and what is a desire, what is a wish. To put it in a general fashion as possible, there are certain things which, if we had them, our lives would be happier. For some it might be fame, for some it might be glory, for some it might be money, for some it might be better health, greater height, perfect vision, popularity, intelligence, academic success, artistic skill, etc. It doesn't matter. Now the point is, I think also any of us who are over 7, if we really face facts, we'll understand that many of the things that we thought we really wanted when we were 5 or 7 or 9 or 15 or 21, in fact, would have been disastrous for us. That in fact, if we had gone on to achieve certain things, that they would not have worked out correctly. If we had married our high school sweetheart, we'd find out that he or she later turned out to be a very disreputable person and would have led us into an unhappy marriage. If we had gotten a job we thought of, it would have led, instead, when the company failed, to a poverty which perhaps we couldn't really deal with. By the same token, perhaps the poverty we're in now has prevented us from dealing with the problems that riches bring. I think in our more rational, quiet, in a certain sense our more mystical moments, we understand that life has worked out rather well. Why? Because what we really wanted, what we asked for when we stood around the wagon with the Dr. Brown's magic elixir, what we asked for was what we got: the cure to warts, the cure to arthritis, the cure for insomnia. Perhaps we didn't even know what we were asking at the time. Perhaps when we asked for something, we thought it was really good. When we asked to win the lottery or get a pony for Christmas, But we can look back now and say, thank God we didn't get those things. What I'm saying is, if a God enters our life in the same sense that the medicine man comes into the town, he calls us, and then he asks us, what's your problem, friend? And no matter what our problem is, he meets it. Before you would buy a bottle of Dr. Brown's magic elixir, you would first have to believe it would work. Or, you would have to be willing to gamble enough to, shall we say, invest a dollar on the result. Now, perhaps the dollar doesn't mean a great deal to you, or perhaps it does. Perhaps you're desperate, perhaps you're not. The point is, it doesn't matter. You'll still walk away with the same bottle, and it'll probably still have the same results on you that it would have with the other person, whether they really wanted it, really desired the solution, or whether they were just having an experiment or spending a dollar on a lark. Jesus tells us that wherever we ask for in his name, believe that we have it, and we do already. Anything we ask for is ours. If we have the faith of a grain of mustard seed, we could say to a mountain or a tree, pick yourself up, throw yourself in the ocean, and it will be done. All we have to do is believe. Believe what? Believe that there is an all-powerful God out there, whose nature is so loving, and whose love for us is so all-encompassing, that it involves directly his power to control the universe, to control the weather, to control whether you get a green light or a red light when you're driving, to control the days under which your shoelaces break so that you're delayed, and to control every other activity in your life so that it brings about for you maximum happiness. In other words, a fulfillment of your desires. Because no matter what you consider a desire or a need, again, we deal with it, its nature is, its definition is, if you get it, you're happier and better off. Let me deal with that for a moment. Can you be better off and not be happier? No. Not if you are rational and not if you understand it. By definition, better means something good, something which brings about benefit, something which brings about a desired beneficial result for you. He is happy who recognizes that things are good, by definition. He is unhappy who recognizes that things are bad, or even worse, does not recognize they are good when they are good. Therefore, this all-loving God, whose Son died on the cross in unspeakable agony so that you could achieve heaven, finds it no difficulty to bring about your happiness, both through salvation and through fulfillment of your desires on earth. Let us follow this a moment more. Let us think about it a little bit. By definition, heaven, which is achieved at salvation, is unspeakable bliss, happiness, joy, and to use another word, fun. By definition, you have fixed your state in the sense of your state of development, your degree of sanctification, when you are dead. Then, of course, you go through the purification process in purgatory, assuming you're saved and assuming you have to. But at that point, your capacity is fixed. Your life has been a struggle to achieve salvation and to develop your personality, your character, your soul, your heart, so that you can achieve as much love, happiness, joy, and fun in heaven as possible. Now, if what you do on earth influences your degree of reward and enjoyment in heaven, the proper way to prepare for the joys and happiness of heaven are to increase your capacity while on earth. How does one do this? By increasing one's capacity for joy, happiness, love, and fun. How does one do that? By enjoying oneself as much as possible, by having one's desires met as much as possible, by seeking fulfillment as much as possible. Now, of course, one might argue at this point that that means pursuing a sinfully selfish view. Absolutely not. But I don't shy away from the word selfish. I do shy away from the word sinful. Remember, we are dealing with a God who is a cure-all, the answer to all problems,
the end to all our needs, the solution to all our discord, the rest and joy which will wipe out all of our sorrows. This is what God is, or this is who God is. As the old catechism would say, and I still think it's an excellent answer, we were made to know, love, and serve God in this world and be happy with Him in the next. Think about that. If you love someone, love can bring at times sweet agony because you are separated from the loved one, but love brings joy. Love brings service. What we call mother's love, the unconditional joy, happiness, and bonding that takes place between a mother and child, occurs to a high degree because of the utter dependence of the newborn on the mother. The mother becomes a 100% servant. Without her constant ministrations and activity, the child will die. This is what binds love in many ways. And the mother becomes submissive to the child and raises the child so that the child may become independent and become capable of carrying on human activity in such a way for the child himself to be joyful. The mother, if she's a good mother, understands what is good for the child and will sometimes put the child through temporary unhappiness, say inoculations and vaccinations, to bring about the ultimate benefit of the child. The mother will not get the child a pony on Christmas because the mother knows that this would not be beneficial for the child, and although the child thinks that he is frustrated, unhappy because of this, when he gets older, when he achieves adulthood, he will see why he should not have gotten the pony for Christmas, regardless of how much he asked for it, not how much he prayed. Magnify that mother's love exponentially and after a number of times, and that is God. Magnify the mother's ability infinitely, exponentially, and that is the ability of God. No matter how patient, no matter how loving the mother is, there's times when the mother gets fatigued, tired, uneasy, impatient. God does not. God's power is like the sun, ever burning. If we wish to take advantage of it, fine. If we wish to go indoors, stay out there burning, ever present. God is ever distributing His love in the form of the rays, the way the sun distributes His heat on us. God is a God of love, of life, of gifts, and of cures. All we have to do is know this, love Him, and serve Him. We know Him through the teachings of the Church and the fulfillment we find because of the law written in our heart, which comes from God, the natural law, the law written in our heart, which makes us cry out for Him, which gives us no satisfaction if we are not close to Him. And this is done for the purposes of making us uneasy without Him, so that we seek Him, so that ultimately we'll be happy with Him. That is again where the love comes in, and that is where the serving comes in. They are all tied together. But notice, as I said before, to be happy with Him in the next world. So, to be happy with Him means, so I hold, and again this is speculative, that one must increase the degree of happiness right now. Very simple. If you are an athlete, and you train for a race by resting, but not by conditioning your muscles, you will be extremely rested on the day of the race, but your chances of winning are essentially nil, because your muscles are not conditioned, they are not ready to go. If you wish the joy of winning, you must understand the conditioning that goes into that joy. And therefore, you must, in a sense, understand these things in advance, sometimes depriving ourselves of the sinfully selfish to achieve the properly selfish. Now, I've used this word selfish a couple of times before. Allow me to deal with it to explain why selfishness is not a vice. Selfishness simply means wanting something for yourself. Quite frankly, if you do not want God for yourself, that is to say salvation, you will not achieve it, because He will not violate your free will. Therefore, you must be selfish enough to want salvation. But also, you should be selfish enough to fulfill God's plan for you. Let me go back to the medicine wagon again. This time, let me try to deal from a purely Catholic, shall we say, milieu or setting. let us examine again the medicine man standing at the front of his wagon holding up his bottle. Now let's imagine a crowd of people that you may very well know. Let us say that this time the medicine man is offering religion. Well, step right up, ladies and gentlemen here. I have a religion for you. Yes, this religion will fulfill all your needs. Yes, sir. Who are you? I'm Thomas Aquinas, and my need is to sit behind books, to read books, to plumb the depths of man's mind, to understand rationally, and to reconcile the great non-Christian minds with Christian beliefs. May I do this? Ah, certainly, son. I'll give you scholasticism just right in the bottle here. Yes, and you. I'm Saint Augustine. I wish to take a more direct approach. I wish to denounce people harshly when they disagree with the faith. I wish to be philosophical while denouncing philosophy. I wish to take the idealistic approach rather than the empirical approach to God through my mind. In other words, I wish to be quite different from Thomas Aquinas. Will it also allow me to find fulfillment of my expressions and my desires? Ah, yes, son. As a matter of fact, you'll make one of the great minds of all times. And you? Yes, I'm Saint Jerome. I also am a scholar, but I wish to disagree with Saint Augustine on things. I wish to come very close to denouncing marriage, and I wish to advocate virginity so much that some people will almost consider me anti-marriage. I wish to be a crank. I am that type of person. I must be a hermit. I must be away from the world. If this religion means for me, it certainly does, Saint Jerome. And the world will be indebted to you for your translation of the Bible. And you? Yes. My name is Louis. I wish to be a king, a great king of France. I wish to serve justice. I wish to go on crusades. I wish to engage in mortal combat with the enemies of the faith for religious and political reasons. By the same token, I wish to function as a supreme head of state. I also wish to marry, have a large number of children, and a good family life. May I find fulfillment in your religion?
Of course, we'll make you Saint Louis the Ninth, King of France, one of the greatest men who ever lived. And you? Well, my name is Thomas Moore. I wish to be a lawyer. Then I wish to be a high-ranking treasury official in a country which will become Protestant. I wish to not seek martyrdom, but to try to avoid it by every legal means possible. I wish to have a wonderful family life, and I wish to write political books
which have almost nothing to do with Catholicism.
May I find fulfillment for my needs in your religion? Of course, Thomas More will make you a saint. And you? My name is Teresa Avila. And I wish as a woman to approach in a tremendous love relationship with Jesus. I wish to go into ecstasy. I wish to find a love which is far beyond any kind of corporal love that anyone's ever experienced. I wish to be able to hold these things secretly in my heart. And I wish to be able to enjoy life so that people will criticize me for sometimes eating partridges instead of praying. Of course, we can also make you a saint, and the man behind you. Well, I'm quite different. My name is Francis, and I was born in Assisi. And what I wish to do is to denounce almost every material thing whatsoever. Unlike St. Louis, although I wanted at one time to be a knight, I no longer want to be a knight. And unlike Thomas More, I don't wish the family life. I don't wish possessions. I don't wish great power. I wish to renounce all these things. I wish to take a personal approach to Jesus. I wish great asceticism, and I wish to bear the wounds of him so may I understand his suffering, his pain, his agony on the cross. May I also be in your church. Of course, it will also meet your needs. I hope at this point you're starting to understand something. One of the strengths of Catholicism is the fact that no matter what a personality is, no matter what the personality traits are, no matter what the personality characteristics, God meets our requirements in our religion. No matter what characteristic the saint had, and all the saints were different, although they fell into general categories, as all people may be divided into general categories, Each saint found fulfillment, joy, happiness, and salvation by having the needs of his personality met by a submissive God, who asked them not to change a bit, who asked them to ask for their heart's desires, and God would meet it without compromising the faith, without compromising the truth, without compromising the personality. In a sense, in a speculative sense, it is he who changes every day to meet what we want. It is he who will meet us on our basis and does not ask for us not what is impossible. He does not ask what is impossible at all. But he does not ask even what is hard. He does not ask even what is difficult. He does not ask even what is to us something unpleasant. What he does is create us in a certain way for us to fulfill a certain plan in his plan of creation. Then he puts the desire in us to find that plan, to fulfill that plan, to be happy in that plan. In other words, it is his desire which he puts in us that he will then meet. It is the submissive God, the one who says to you, what do you will? What do you will to do? What do you will to become? How do you will to enter into a relationship with me? What do you want? And then he says, you've got it. It's all in this bottle. Just simply eat my flesh and drink my blood, and I will come and dwell within you, and together we will fulfill what you want. And only later will you possibly understand that all the time it was what I wanted. But that is the nature of love. The nature of love is to submit to what the other person wants because you want it also. I used the situation before of the submissive wife. The submissive wife uses the husband to fulfill her needs, and her needs are to fulfill the needs of her husband and her family. The nature of God is such that if we could use that word need, he needs to do for us what is best for us. And when he does that, he submits to our desires and holds up the bottle, holds up his son, and says, here it is. Whatever you want, you'll find it within. And in that way, God does submit to our will. Once again, I remind you that this tape has been speculative, and I have used poetic and exaggerated language to get across an insight which I believe you can benefit from. Additional copies of this tape may be obtained by contacting us and any of the other tapes or any of the other products which our organization puts out. You may write us at All Roads Ministry, which you may abbreviate ARM, 55 Palen, that's P-A-L-E-N, T as in Paul, Road, L as in Lincoln, 38, Hopewell, that's one word, spelt the way it sounds, Junction, separate word, the state is New York, our zip code is 12533. Again, your speaker has been Ben Lewis, founder and president of All Roads Ministry. I hope that you've appreciated this tape, and we always are interested in your comments, and if you have any suggestions or criticisms, particularly suggestions as to new products, please let us know. Feel free to contact me personally.